Welcome to the Sinner Story podcast. For the first time ever, step inside a retreat informal room. These intimate gatherings between mentors and writers are a hallmark of every Sinner Story retreat. They offer writers a chance to get real-world, in-depth advice from industry professionals. Recorded at the 2011 Sinner Story Retreat, in this informal, two literary managers take on the topic, how to be a working writer. They discuss things such as how to write a script that will sell, which TV shows to spec, how to take notes, and how best to work with your manager or agent. Enjoy.
So we actually have a designated topic that, to be totally honest, some of you probably know better than I do. I was just saying to Josh, I'm happy to talk about the designated topic if somebody wants to supply it back to us. But I'm also happy to find that, look, this is all about you guys. It's not about us. And the fastest way to get to talking about what is useful to the majority of you guys is probably to let you guys throw out topics or questions that are of interest to you. So that would be my inclination if nobody's opposed.
Well, the topic was how to be a working writer, so if there's anything you want to riff off of that, because I think we all want to know how to be a working writer.
Yeah. You want to work as a writer? You don't want to just do it for fun?
Exactly.
You serious? I'll just say, you know, from my standpoint, you know, and then we'll just sort of both talk, and as you have questions, bring them up. You know, it's interesting. I said to one person yesterday that a script and a movie are two completely different things, and it takes a real professional writer to understand that, and there are a lot of writers out in Hollywood that have written a ton of scripts, and I've never actually seen one of their scripts get made, and you can see the difference sometimes, someone who really understands the craft of making a movie and not just writing something. Movies are a fantastic medium. They're a visual medium. You know, people want to see sometimes the less is more approach. You know, you don't always want to be told stuff. You don't want, you know, in a thriller, you don't want to find out something as the audience before the character has. You know, you don't want to be talked to. Sometimes you sort of want to just see things. And I brought up this example yesterday of Lovely Bones. There's this fantastic sequence where she goes into the house. If you guys don't know the movie, there's a kidnapping, and the sister is trying to figure out what happened, and she goes into Stanley Tucci's house, and it's just so much less is more. Like, there is no dialogue. It's just like, you know, she's walking, suddenly there's a creak, Stanley Tucci comes back into the house. Like, you know, it's just really nice to sort of just see something play out, and you don't know, the character's not saying like, oh, I just found this, now I gotta go figure out. It's like, you're just sort of on the journey with the character. So I think that's something that is really important to remember sometimes, is that you don't always have to spell things out. Sometimes you can just sort of write and not worry about, you know, feeling compelled to say something. You can just sort of write. So that's one thing I know that was brought up recently.
I would agree with that 1,000%. I think that's a really, really interesting distinction. And you know, there are a lot of people that would be very happy to have sold, you know, five movies and you know, notwithstanding the fact that none of them had gotten made. I mean, that's a nice career, and you know, a lot of people, depending on their lifestyle, can make a living doing that. But yeah, the difference between writing a movie and getting a movie made is, I think, very often a lot of what Josh is talking about. It is very often understanding that, unfortunately or not, depending on your perspective, the first sale, which is the sale of the script, happens, you know, at one time and place. And at some point down the road, the really important second sale, which is the transition from I've got a script in development to my movie's getting made, happens. And that transition almost always happens in Hollywood as a function of, you know, Baz Luhrmann getting involved or Leonardo DiCaprio getting involved. And so why do those guys get involved? Yes, they're going to look at the screenplay in a kind of a holistic way, but Baz Luhrmann's going to look at a screenplay and he's going to look at the scene that Josh was just talking about and go, wow, I can't not direct that scene. I love that scene. There's something visually that speaks to me because that's what I am. I'm a director and I think visually. Leonardo DiCaprio, sure, he's going to read the whole script, but he's going to look at that role and he's going to go, for me as an actor, what do I get to do in that role that is different from what I've gotten offered, you know, every week with a $20 million check attached to it for the last, you know, 6 months? And so I think it's a really, really smart thing to think from the very beginning of your process, not just about your story holistically, and I'm not suggesting that's not important, it's obviously hugely important, but I think to be thinking in terms of, you know, is there a central role here that is so compelling that somebody like Leonardo DiCaprio, who gets offered the greatest roles that come across any agent's desks on a, you know, monthly basis, that he or his agent would be willing to say, yeah, that's bigger and better than the average role, that's meatier for me, I get to really chew up the scenery, or that's just different than something I've ever seen on screen before and therefore would be fun for me to do. I think that's a big key to kind of getting past that transition point as well.
Yeah, I was actually just going to jump onto that really quickly and say, when you're writing, definitely, definitely do not write in a vacuum of, this is my story, I'm sticking to it, this is what I want to write. You know, really try and think of who's your audience, who's your studio that you're targeting, who's, you know, the director that you would love to have do it, who's the actor you would love to have do it. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, people will have a role that's sort of, you know, like the main character, and then sometimes they'll have like a side character who's not really that big. And it's like, remember, at some point, yeah, hopefully you get that lead actor in there as well, but like in terms of packaging, like the lead character's not the only character. You know, your side character, if you want, I don't know, what's a good example? Like, okay, Sherlock Holmes. If you want Watson to be in that movie, you gotta have a real role there, you know, so that someone can say, hey, that's a real role, I want to be in that. You know, and you have to have some visual stuff so a director will say, wow, that's not just a good story, but I can't, that scene, I cannot wait to shoot that scene, you know, and being able to actually target your studio, you know, really get to know the Hollywood system. You know, let me think, what are my five moments that would be great for a trailer?
How does it work? Do you have relationships that you sort of focus on, like, okay, I know the guys at Focus, I know the guys at Paramount, but I know nobody at Disney, or like, how do your relationships work? Yeah, so you know the whole town.
Yeah, we're doing our jobs right.
Okay. Because I know, like, I come from the acting world, and that's kind of how they did. Like, they very much were like, these are the casting directors I specialize with, and my assistant and my, you know, the other person in my office works with these people, but you guys kind of are across. So, like, as we're looking for representation, it's not like, oh, I should go to this person because they specialize in this genre.
I would argue that, look, at the end of the day, everybody has their taste, yeah, right? I mean, I can speak to mine, Josh can speak to his. There are a few management companies out there that I sort of associate with genre-specific stuff, but that's a pretty rare phenomenon. I think for the most part, you know, any manager wants to be active in the whole business. That means all the genres that we just talked about and beyond. And, you know, all the studios that we just talked about and beyond. So, yeah, I mean, a good manager, a good agent, their job is just to know who's out there and who's looking for what. And if you're ever represented by somebody who says, oh, I can't make that phone call because I don't know so-and-so, that's a sign that they're not doing their job right.
Yeah, I was going to say, a really important thing with agents and managers is don't worry about what they've done before, what they're good at. Like, they've got five thriller writers, so they're good at thrillers. Like, don't worry about that. Worry about who you connect to. At this point, everyone's got to try everything because there's just not enough, you know, movies getting made for you to be like, oh, I wouldn't do something like that. Or as a manager, I wouldn't rep someone who writes something like that. Like, there's no real room for that. If you don't spark to the voice, fine. But, like, agents and managers especially, like, always go with someone that you feel comfortable with. Don't worry about, oh, well, I write romantic comedies and they don't really have romantic comedy writers. If he or she sparks to your voice and says, I can sell this and I like you as a writer and we connect, yeah, then cool. You should have a good relationship.
Yeah, agree 1,000%.
Sure, like, day-to-day relationship with your clients, how often do you talk to them?
Never. Thank God for text messages and emails.
I would say that it really depends on where they are in sort of the life cycle of a given thing. You know, if I've got somebody who's, you know, kind of coming down the home stretch, developing a new project that we're going to send out, then, yeah, I'll be talking to that person, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a week quite extensively. Or, you know, if we're coming down the home stretch on a pitch that they're getting ready to go out with. And on the other hand, you know, you get clients who get a job, and I work in TV quite a bit. You know, if you get a client a job in TV, they will very often go off, and you know, they've got 40 weeks of work, and you know, you talk to them during that period of time, but they're going to an office from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. They don't have much time to talk to you at that point. So it really just varies a lot depending on, you know, where they are in the process. Hold that thought for one second. What's your sort of experience?
Well, really just, it's a case-by-case basis. You know, if you ever feel like you're not getting the right, the bigger issue, I think, is if you feel like you're not getting the right attention, then that's always something to be cognizant of. And actually, I got both of my first two clients because they were slipped to me as their managers were too busy producing or too busy with something else and didn't have the right time for them. So they left those managers, and I said, look, right now I'm like this young guy. I got no wife, no kids, no house. I don't even have a girlfriend. All I do is work right now. Like, I am a guy that's just going to be doing nonstop work for you. And they were like, this sounds great. I said, whatever you want to call me, call me. I'm a workaholic.
Well, I have an agent who tries to make me cry. I feel like that's
yeah, it's probably a problem.
and I have a football strip, and some plays tennis. So my question was about if we're, you know, I do features, but if we're going to write TV, what are the shows for specs that people want to see specs of?
So here's my sort of my measuring stick for deciding what you're going to write as a spec TV show. One, you've either got to be willing to go out and watch every episode of it, or it's got to be something that you know and love already. From then a market perspective, ideally it'd be something that has been on for at least a year and been renewed, so it's going into its second season at the very least. If a show's been on the air for more than 4 seasons, it should be absolutely don't even think of it. So yeah, How I Met Your Mother would be something that most people would violently resist reading because they've read thousands of them.
Okay.
So if you can find something in that sort of 2 to 4 range, that's sort of ideal, and then throw your taste into the mix and find something that you really love.
And is it good to try to take on, like, a Modern Family, or it's like, whoa, those are such good writers, there's no way you're going to be as good in them, or to take on something that's a little more accessible?
I don't think ever be intimidated by a show per se, right? I mean, if you love, you know, Breaking Bad, which is probably some of the best writing on television, don't think, wow, that's for 5 years from now. I can't do a Breaking Bad. I mean, you know, you may or may not write a great Breaking Bad spec, but you shouldn't not try if you love the show and know the show. And I would say the same about Modern Family. I think Modern Family is one of those rare comedies that got so big so fast that even though it probably falls within the guidelines I just threw out, it's probably already a little bit oversaturated.
Okay.
Community, I think, great overlooked show that maybe is not quite as oversaturated.
I'm going to ask a question because I actually don't know this stuff as well, but someone gave me one of these scripts and I thought it was so clever, and then my sister who works in TV was like, oh yeah, that's like a known thing, like people do that a lot. I was like, well, I thought it was so ingenious. Someone gave me a spec of an old TV show,
yes,
but doing like a new take on it, she said it was called like
a stunt spec. I think, I would advise against doing it at this point. One, because you won't get credit for being clever anymore because it's sort of an inherited idea. And it doesn't do the fundamental thing that you want to do in a spec. You know, when a showrunner's reading your spec, they just want to know, can this writer capture the voice of my show? And, you know, you're not demonstrating that if you do a stunt spec. Although they are incredibly entertaining to read. So, yeah. Proceed with caution.
For some reason, I've heard that the vogue in the industry is actually moving away from specking current shows and actually looking towards specking original ideas. What do you recommend for us to have in our portfolio? Like one of each, or?
Yeah, that's exactly right. When I am talking to a studio exec about a young TV writer, I am never entirely sure whether they're going to be more interested in reading original material, but that happens very commonly, or more interested in reading a spec of an existing show, because if you've got no credits, they need to know first and foremost you can capture the voice of an existing show. So I would say that the basic, you know, sort of starter package for somebody that wants to go out and try to be staffed and meet people in the TV world is one of each.
Not speaking to the TV executives, but as a manager, I will say, and this is probably the biggest advice I give people, is for me, write what you write best, write what you enjoy the most, and write what you think is the most commercial. And at some point, you have to find a balance of those three, and that's probably the ideal thing you should be writing. Because if you write something that you like the most and you write the best, but it's not really commercial, that's sort of difficult because people want to see that you have a commercial mind. If you write something that's commercial but you don't write it well, that's obviously not good. Or if it's not something you enjoy doing, that's not really good. So some balance of what you enjoy writing, what you like, you know, like writing, what you think you actually write well, and that is at least relatively commercial, some sort of balance of that is probably a good idea.
I feel like you're in my head right now, because that is probably everything that you just said, including that's probably the most important advice you can give somebody, something that I couldn't agree with more. It's that's a real challenge, right? Finding that, I mean, sometimes it's a real challenge, depends on what your sensibility is, but that notion of finding the intersection between what I love, and so I'm going to be excited to get up every morning and work on it, but which has, you know, some reasonable expectation, however we define that, of being embraced by the larger marketplace. And, you know, I think that's the decision, right, that most writers spend the least amount of time on, but which really is worth the most amount of time, right? You're going to spend 6, 8, 9 months, whatever, writing your feature spec, but people spend a shockingly small amount of time figuring out where that intersection is before they jump in, or just not thinking about the intersection at all. And that, to me, that's the, you know, as managers, I think you probably think in these terms as well. One of our jobs is not necessarily to take a writer who would be unsuccessful in most cases and make them successful, but to take a writer who's got talent and get them successful faster, get them to, you know, whatever that definition of success is, faster. And, you know, if you're writing, as Josh said, great, not commercial scripts because you're not thinking about, you know, this intersection, you're just, you know, prolonging the period of time it's going to take for you to kind of pry the door open.
And by the way, that it sounds so simple when you say it out loud. Like, oh, yeah, obviously. But it's actually not that simple, because a lot of people will start writing something they think is some huge idea, and you're like, is that you to write that? Like, oh, no, I can't write this stuff at all. I just think this is such a good idea. It's like, well, good luck. You might spend a year. It is a cool idea, but if you're not the right writer for it, it's not going to end up being such a great sample. You get someone be like, wow, that guy definitely has good ideas, but man, he can't execute it. So that's actually worse. You know, now you're below neutral, because now you've actually proven that you couldn't write this well. It's like, go find a good idea that you actually can write well and that you'll enjoy writing.
And so, do you want to touch on the difference between what managers do and what agents do?
Yeah.
Or not?
Yeah. No. Listen, this is about you guys. And look, that's a sort of a classic question, and it's an important distinction to understand. Because I think the roles are, you know, there's an incredible amount of overlap, but there's also really a widening gulf in my experience between what the two do. You know, when management as a phenomenon kind of came about back in the sort of late 50s and 60s, and performers had personal managers, it was really a performer's, you know, sort of thing. Writers and directors didn't have managers. And I think in part that was because agencies at that time, one, there were enough agencies in town, they were big enough, they were sort of stratified enough that as a young, developing, quote-unquote, writer, you could find somebody who was willing to take you on as an agent and kind of mentor you to the point where you could be sort of commercially successful. That really, I don't want to say without exception, but almost without exception, doesn't exist anymore in the agency world. And that doesn't make agents good, bad, or indifferent. It's just sort of a function of their model. There are basically 6 agencies in town now, and some, you know, very small sort of one-person shops. But at those big 6 agencies, if you are making money, you are potentially worth looking at. If you were not making money, you're just not worth looking at for them, because that's not the way their business works. So what happened in many ways is I think managers started to become that bridge between, you know, the developing writer community and the agency community that you know, young agents used to be on their own. That's one of the many things that managers do. I always say when people talk to me about agents versus managers and do I want one or do I want both, you know, an agent, when you think about the function day-to-day, in my opinion, the agent's job, since they're only going to talk to you for 20 seconds a week, is to be out in the universe and making themselves aware of every conceivable buyer slash opportunity slash person that the writer might ever want to meet. That's their job, is to know everything and be information gatherers. And agencies, which are big consolidated organizations now, are really wonderful information gathering apparatuses. They do that fantastically, and that's one of the great values of having an agent. An agent will typically not be somebody that you call and say, I've got this idea about a baseball-playing monkey, and I can't decide whether I should write it or not. You know, is anybody else doing a baseball-playing monkey movie right now? And, you know, if I did it, should the lead be a young girl who's trying to get a baseball scholarship at Long Beach, or should, you know, that's a conversation that you're gonna have with a manager these days, just because the agent, and frankly, it's a good thing, the agent would be taking away from what you want the agent to be doing, which is out finding opportunities for you, if they did an hour a day with each of their clients. The other thing about big agencies is, you know, the average agent has now got, you know, 60 to 100 clients. And so if they spent an hour on the phone with each of them, you know, just once a week, they would literally do nothing but talk to clients. So a lot of people, I guess I say this because a lot of people sort of express frustration at the notion that agents are, you know, sort of unreachable and I don't get a lot of feedback from them. And yes, that's aggravating, but if they're doing that basic thing that you really want them to be doing, they're finding the opportunities for you and connecting you to those opportunities, then that's great. And then what your manager does is virtually everything else and helps the agent get your material out in the marketplace, whether it's a new script or a pitch or you're trying to staff when those opportunities come. So there's a tremendous amount of overlap, but I always say if you're going to have somebody that you want to share a beer with on a Friday night, make sure that's your manager. And as Josh said, look, you want your agent to be somebody that you've got simpatico with. I would argue it's less important to have simpatico with your agent, because you're just going to be spending less time with him or her than your manager. Or you should be, in my opinion.
I think maybe not every single person. I don't know if it's every single person needs a manager, but I'd say most people, it's probably good to have both. Unless you are working with an agent who is just so, like, has the time to just be so involved with you. But as he was just saying, like, maybe that's not the best thing. Maybe that shows that they're not out doing everything else. But, like, agents are doing so much, and they are out meeting everyone and talking to everyone and finding out what open assignments are, what movies are going to be put together. They're now representing Mattel, whatever that means, like, and they're having staff meetings all day long about how do we build this. And even if you sign with a young agent because, you know, he's your age, or, like, he you know, gets you and he doesn't have Steven Spielberg yet, he has Steven Spielberg. Like, no matter what client he has, he is servicing every agent above him. And that's where so much of their energy goes into, that when you're starting out, it's so not, it is so hard to be a working writer in this industry, that why not have as many allies on your side as possible? And yeah, some people will say, like, oh, it's another 10%, but, like, you know what? 10% of what you end up making is a lot better than 0% of nothing.
Yeah.
Managers can actually be there on the day-to-day helping you through, like, every little thing. And the way that it was kind of told to me is, like, exactly what he just said is, you know, if you call your agent and say, oh, like, I want to talk about this monkey thing that I want to... If you start doing that conversation, you're probably going to get lower on their phone sheet, because they're going to be like, oh, shit, I don't have time. I don't have time to call this person, because they're going to want to talk for a while. And, like, that's not... It's not great, but that sort of is a little of the situation. Whereas the way it was told to me, which is great, that, like, if you want to get in really good with the agents who are representing your writers, as a manager, what you could be doing is doing like, all right, let's do this, 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 let's get all this stuff done, and then call your agent and say, hey, we need this, this, and this, and that's it. And the agent will go, awesome, I can do that. Yeah. I will do that right now and call you right back, rather than, so we're kind of thinking, could we just have a meeting? Can we all get together? It's like, no. Like, I am trying to do so many other things. But if you have a great relationship with a manager, then you can go into that agent and say, here's where we need your help. And then that's really...
Can you all meet once a year for that, like, come to Jesus meeting? Like, these are the projects she's working on.
Yeah.
So once a year.
I don't think there's any set thing. You can meet whenever you want to. I think it's just a manager is so much more about your day-to-day...
Well, the relationship is not, sort of uniform from one manager-client relationship to the next, right? There are certain clients that are, sort of know the business and the politics of the business really well, and, they're interested in new opportunities and creative help and, things like that. And there are maybe younger clients who, if you're sending them out pitching for the first time or they're going out on staffing meetings or what have you, really do benefit from being sort of educated and kind of getting some context about the politics of the room they're about to walk into. And it just varies radically from client to client. I have guys who would never write a draft of a script without a lot of conversation with me, which I enjoy. I'm a former development executive as well, and it's a lot of those same, sort of skill sets. And I have clients who are, really sort of self-directed and, know what's liable to work. And when they come up with a great idea, they say, hey, this is what I'm thinking about writing. And they say, great. And they go off and do it. And it varies tremendously. So there's no right or wrong answer. And there's no right or wrong about what you want. It's like any human relationship, you have to gauge whether, it's working and you're getting what you want. But that's really the litmus test. Are you getting what you want from one or both of them?
Yeah, and I was even going to add one more thing, which really surprised me, but like, it's exactly, so it's whatever you want out of that relationship. And that's the interesting thing about writing, is like, everyone sort of has their things they're good at, and like, maybe you're not a good first act person, maybe you don't know how to get into your movie, but once you get in, you're off to the races. So again, having someone that you can work with to say, look, you are not a first act kind of person, let's help your first act kind of get there because the rest of it's so good. Or you're not an idea person. Or you're not a this person. Like, every writer has something they're really good at, but something maybe they lack a little bit. And, like, that's what's so amazing about this business is, like, everyone sort of just has things they're good at and things they need help with. And, I don't know, because it is so hard, why would you not have as many people with actual, experience in this industry trying to help you out? Because giving it to your buddy is great and all, but a lot of times your buddy's going to be like, man, this is awesome. This is perfect.
Love that monkey idea.
Yeah. Man, dude, I can't wait to see your movie. This is like the best idea ever. Or your mom or whatever. It's like, sometimes you need someone who's good. Okay, this is another really good thing to say. Your manager, your agent should be brutally honest, because it is so hard to be brutally honest in this industry. We put our blood, sweat, and tears into these scripts, even if we don't write them, even if we're just the developer. It's so hard to give yourself to someone and have them go, it's not really that good. It's hard to say that to people. And everyone always says, man, I really wish people would be more honest in Hollywood. Yeah, but it's not easy. It's really not easy to tell someone, I just didn't like it that much, or I didn't like this that much. It's really hard. And so the people who actually are working with you, you would hope that you have that shorthand and that honesty for them to be able to say, I gotta be honest, this isn't working. This is not a movie. This is not a TV show. These characters don't fit. Let's get back in there. Let's really work on them. So your agent and manager should be the ones who feel comfortable. Like, if you're going to fire me over this, fire me, because I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to be honest and say, I love this. I like this. Don't like this, let's change this. Let's roll up our sleeves, get in there, and change that.
So this kind of goes back, there's the interpersonal, the simpatico, but as we've been talking about these rivers, everyone also has their own aesthetic, right? And so, and I guess you can't really know, I guess if someone chooses to take you on, you would hope then that they have a sense of your aesthetic, and that's
but they may never get you perfectly. And that's right. But that's why you should feel comfortable to say, out of those 10 notes,
right.
Fine, I agree with those 8, but I will fight you to the death on those last 2 because I disagree. And you should have that relationship where you go back and forth and the manager or agent says, like, no, I will fight you to the death. And you're like, I will fight. This is why I believe this. This is why I believe this. And as long as you can build your case and say, this is why I believe this, in the end of the day, it's your script.
Right.
It's no one else's. It's your script. So listen. And that's a really important thing as a writer. You have to be able to take notes. If someone's giving you 10 notes and you say, I disagree with all 10, that could be difficult.
But earlier you were saying, like, okay, you can have a variety of things that you like as a person. But it would seem, I mean, I don't know. Do you think people, like, represent people who have an aesthetic or a thematic that kind of overlap? Or do you don't think that there's...
You rep what you like?
I don't ever think in those terms, but I don't think most managers do.
You just don't feel like you're drawn to it, though, on some...
I think you read a script, right, and you think, one, the quality of this writing is really strong in a declarative way. And of course, you know, the content and aesthetic that the writer's chosen probably has some meaning to me that is above and beyond the average script I read. That's probably the litmus test for anybody taking somebody on. Right. But, no, I don't consciously seek out somebody that does X or somebody that does Y.
The flip side of what I'm actually asking is when you, like in the book world, when you're going to send a query to an agent or something, you say, I know you represent this person, and because of that, I think that there's a way that you might be interested in reading this, whatever. And so in terms of, like, that sort of thing, looking at people as managers, as you're, like, trying to, like, you know, because you may be approaching a manager in a query situation or whatever, but, so what would you look for that would let you know that a manager might be a better fit over someone else randomly?
Well, that's just sort of where I said, like, you know, yeah, that maybe that's a good place to start. Like, hey, you represent the guy who wrote Ghostbusters. I have Ghost Attackers. Like, this is perfect. But that may not be the right guy for you. And maybe that's a good place to start.
Right.
Maybe he'll be like, maybe.
The question is, like, how from those of us who are sitting on the outside, we talk about contests before when we had our one-on-one.
Right.
But even if you have, like, some of that stuff going on, like, you're doing more than a one-pronged approach to try to connect with people. So what are the things that we should be looking for from the outside that would help us winnow down who we should be initially trying to make contact with?
I wouldn't put much of a filter on that process at all, because the truth is, in that initial sort of foray, one, the world is huge, and you could drive yourself nuts trying to be, you know, selective and picking your criteria, right? You will hopefully get the opportunity to meet various managers in the course of, you know, that period of time when you're trying to transition into representation, and you will hopefully have the opportunity to say, even if you only meet one person, I get them enough that this feels comfortable and this is a good way for me to get started. You know, if as Josh said, if you meet somebody and they're just talking this way and you're talking that way, that's just, you know, even if they're the only person that's shown interest in you, you got to think long and hard about, do you want to make that relationship? I just don't think there's a way to prejudge it. Unless, you know, you know people in the industry and you can call somebody and say, hey, is so-and-so, what's your take on him or her? Otherwise, what I said to you when we talked, that, you know, if a manager's not in L.A. or New York, I'd be extraordinarily suspicious, but I can't think of many other filters to apply in the early stages. You know, if somebody's out there and they're, you know, and they're in business, they're probably worth approaching. And, you know, if you hate them, you hate them when you meet them. But
parallel to what you guys were saying earlier is, you have, you know, some people who are not idea people, some people are not first act people, some people are not this, some people are not that. I think as a younger writer, I think the first thing that you feel is you have to be good at everything. And so to hear that is kind of an interesting thing to hear. And so then when you're reading a script that comes to you from somebody like us, how is it that you identify that you would be willing to take this person on, knowing that not everybody is good at everything? This guy may be the idea guy, but he's not the first act guy, but he's the third act guy. You know, what within that, what makes sense for you?
It's a gut thing. You either read a script and you say, I can't even just get, like, something about this guy. Just I I feel like I can help this person. Yeah, you want to be as good as possible at everything. But yeah, you know, I'll never forget the best advice I ever got. I'm really big on hyperbole. If you guys can't tell. One of the best pieces of advice I've ever gotten was this executive who came to me and he was like, I said, wow, you're doing so well, you're doing so well. It's like when I first came to LA and I was an assistant, he was an executive, he's like, success is so relative, like, yeah, to you I'm doing so well, but to the, you know, there was this guy who said, look, to be a good executive or good anything in Hollywood, you should be able to read a phenomenal script and know that it's not a movie, if it's just not a movie, in the same way that you should be able to read an awful script but know that it is a movie. And really train your eye to see where is the talent, you know? So, yeah, you want the script to be as good as possible, but if there are certain things that are lacking, if you wrote a perfect script, then you don't need anyone anywhere. If it was that good, it'd already be a movie. It's not a movie, it's a script. So why is it not a movie yet? Be able to really analyze and say that. So don't worry that your script isn't perfect yet. It's really hard to make a perfect script. There are only a handful of writers that can do something like that. It's really difficult. Make your script as good as possible and then try to work with people on what's lacking.
And don't trick yourself into thinking, you know, one of these skill sets is more important than the other. You know, I've got to write a fantastic first act, or I've got to be great with, you know, snappy dialogue, or I've got to have the biggest, you know, as Josh said, they're all important. It's not like any one of those becomes a crutch, although everybody has things that they're better at, and those things emerge over time.
Wouldn't we though argue though that all things equal, the first act is more important because you're not getting past page 10. You're giving the
first act definitely more important. I'm loving it by page 80, if he ends it terribly, I'm disappointed.
He's already a client.
Sure.
He's already a client when you say, hey, you're not a first act guy. When you're reading stuff and it's not a first act guy, that's on the pile and you're rolling onto your next script. I mean,
true.
Right?
True, mostly, but if you do give it a chance, you can sometimes see, like, unless it is just god-awful, I will very rarely only read, like, 10 pages. I'll usually get to, like, page 40. You know, some people will do 30, you know, first act. So I'll try and get to, like, 40. I'll always try and give it a chance. But, yeah, I mean, at some point, it's got to turn the corner.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you can't just be someone who wrote, like, the last 10 pages that are great.
We touched upon this in the last session a little bit, but when...
They didn't say it as good as us.
What if does a manager become a slashy producer manager?
Sure. So to me, this is always a conversation that ought to flow from what has the manager contributed in some significant way and what's the client comfortable with? That's not how it always works, but that is, in my opinion, how it ought to work. So, for me personally, what that means is if I, you know, Josh was talking about their client who's not a great idea guy. If I bring somebody an idea that, you know, I think has intrinsic value, as we talked about yesterday, and we develop it from the ground up, and the client is comfortable with it, and I'd ask, you know, sort of up front, I will generally want to be involved with that process as a producer going forward. There are obviously probably different ways that's done at different companies.
By the way, while no one has a question, one thing that I wanted to say as well, and this is more of like a life thing, and maybe it's just a personal thing, not necessarily a Hollywood thing, but like someone was asking a question of like, you know, about like, you know, what type of manager or agent should you go after because of something that you share, because of like an old client or another client that they have or whatever. One of my pet peeves in life in general, but also especially this industry, is like try and just get to know people also. Like people really think that Hollywood is like this cutthroat and like people are just looking to say no and nasty. And it's like, I personally don't think that. I really think Hollywood's great. I think maybe I'm naive, but I think it's like a really supportive network and like people are all trying to do the same thing. We're all trying to like say yes. We say no a lot, but like we're trying to say yes. But like something that really will help you is try and connect with people on just like a personal level and just like be like a good person.
I think you raised a really good point. Can you talk about the importance of being good in the room?
Oh, it's huge.
Like, what are tips for writers? You know, how to break the ice? You know, I always like to start with a compliment.
Sure,
know? So that's my little quirky thing. Like, and I happen to like shoes. I mean, this works better with them.
But totally.
So,
like, just start with, yeah, if you like my shoes, I'd be like, you know, I kind of like my shoes too. I think they're really like hip, cool new shoes. They're the first like hip shoes I've gotten in a while.
But like, what are some other things, like if you don't like talking about shoes, what are some other things?
Anything.
Like,
talk about life. Like, just make a connection. You know, just like, oh man, it is so hot out there. I cannot believe how hot it, I don't know, just talk about something. Like, there's no reason to be nervous. You know, like, I was just at a pitch fest recently, and this girl was nervous, and I was like, why are you nervous? I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy that likes movies, too.
That's not what we're told, though. And, like, along what you said earlier about knowing people's time and knowing how much time that they have, and I think those of us on this side of it are always told, you don't have time. People walk in. I think that's what they're thinking. They're thinking, like, I have 5 minutes, I have 15 minutes, whatever the case may be. I have to start getting to the point. Rather than, you know, start engaging you about, you know, Carl's Jr. or something.
Although that is an excellent topic. It is, you get me on Carl's Jr. any day.
Yeah, come on, that Paris Hilton ad, you can start talking about anything.
It is obviously dependent on the circumstances. I think, you know, Josh was talking a little bit more about a situation where, you know, you've set some time aside to sit down with somebody and either have them pitch you or what have you. You know, if you're meeting somebody to pitch fest and you've got 3 minutes before the bell rings, right, you're probably not going to sit down and say, you know, tell me what your hobbies are. It's circumstance dependent.
You can still have human interaction.
Yeah.
Even in a 3 minute pitch, you can acknowledge that you see somebody, you can check in how their day is going.
Absolutely. You want to find, and as Josh said very eloquently a minute ago, this is not just a Hollywood thing, this is a life thing. You want to find commonality. I think we all take great satisfaction in connecting with other people. If I'd gone to Northwestern, Josh and I would talk about going to Northwestern. If we both love soccer, we'll talk about soccer. If we're both fans of, you know, the Yankees, we'll talk about the Yankees. You walk into somebody's office or you see somebody in person for the first time and, you know, you've got a little bit of evidence to work with. You know, maybe there's a one sheet on the wall, but there's a movie that you like.
Oh,
maybe
I love that movie.
A stack of books on the shelf behind them, right? You know, there's a picture of somebody that's their personal idol. You know, there's stuff.
There's a diploma.
Exactly. So you find that commonality because, again, nothing's more satisfying, I think, to anybody in any human transaction than to find the commonality. Yeah. Nobody takes a great deal of satisfaction walking away from an interaction going, I got nothing in common with that person, and I didn't connect with them on any level.
And the thing is, you can practice, like, with your doctor.
Yeah.
You can practice with a waiter.
Yeah.
I have a question. You brought up Pitch Fest a couple times. What's your feeling about Pitch Fest? Is that something that, you know, is a money suck? Do you advise your clients who are baby writers to go? I mean, or is that a great networking opportunity? I mean, just opinion. I'd be curious.
I'm not personally a huge fan of Pitch Fest. You know, if somebody's already got a manager, I don't think it's in any way, shape, or form useful because, you know, the relationships that they're going to make at a Pitch Fest are hopefully relationships they could make much better if I called and sent material and said, you should meet this guy since you like his material, right? Two minutes in front of somebody waiting for the bell to ring is just not a great way to establish a relationship. That said, you know, there's success stories out there. People do hear... get traction sometimes at those. I think CineStory is sort of genius for figuring out that it's a much more meaningful interaction if the people on one side of the desk read the scripts before they show up and the people on the other side of the desk get 90 minutes to sit down with them and talk to them about it rather than 2 minutes and a bell. That's my personal take. I've done them. Not a huge fan.
Yeah. They're tough. I mean, you know, I think... Sinister doesn't have a pitch fest, do they?
No.
I think Hollywood is all about thinking outside the box, and if I were a writer, I would think of a really smart way to think outside the box of a pitch fest.
My two cents, and I'm nobody, is If you have that money, I would go to Sundance, because Sundance is sort of the great equalizer. You're waiting online with people.
Yeah, exactly.
Just have a conversation. Sort of like, wow, it's cold.
Yeah.
Oh, leather pants. Are those good? Yeah. You know, like, just do that. And it's, you know, and it's so, it's such an equalizer. And everyone's there because they love movies. And you're oh, did you see that? Oh, I'm curious if you, and it's stress free.
Yeah.
You know?
Go to a Hollywood party.
And everybody's. You have to dress up.
But I'm saying, like, just go where people
like
are going to be
baseball
around.
Cap and, you know, and maybe leather pants. And it just seems like that's a more stressless.
Yeah. Stressful. And by the way, but
or any you know, what's the nearest? The Tribeca Film Festival or whatever's in your city or Austin or Southwest, or, you know, like, because people go to them and, you know, just be yourself.
And I don't know what you would say about this, but I feel like, you know, the reason to go to something like that is just to start the connection, so that way you can pitch later.
Yeah.
So instead of just going up to someone and saying, like, hey, I'd love to talk to you about an idea, go up to someone, just try and meet them, establish a connection, and then say, like, you know, I actually, you know, it's funny, you were talking about that. I actually, you know, I have some idea that I've been kind of playing with, you know, maybe if you're around later, you know, just something.
That is hugely valuable. Again, I think not just in film, but in life in general. But what I say to all my clients is, yes, we all hear these stories about, you know, somebody goes in and pitches something, and they're meeting the person they're pitching to for the very first time. And that person falls in love with them, and falls in love with the pitch, and buys it in the room. And, you know, that's like sort of winning the lottery, right? It happens in the way that people win the lottery, but you can't plan for that. The way that business evolves is that, as Josh is saying, you meet somebody, you develop a rapport. Maybe the first time you sit down with them, there is no ostensible topic of conversation at all. In Hollywood, we have a meeting that we call the meet and greet, and it's just about a buyer has read something that they like, and they want to meet the writer and see if the writer is, you know, kind of a nice person to sit in a room with for 45 minutes. And if that goes well, then, you know, maybe next year that same executive gets a second script from that writer. Zach meets him again and is starting to think, well, this person's consistent. They write every year. I've met him a couple of different times now. He or she was nice and friendly and engaging both times. It wasn't a fluke. I am now beginning to be able to conceive of, you know, saying to my studio exec or my boss or my partner, this is a guy that would be interesting for this job. You know, it just doesn't happen the first time out. When you meet somebody, you are naturally in a kind of, depending on your personality, a defensive mode, and you've got to let them sort of make that connection with you before you're going to be comfortable doing anything, let alone hiring them for a huge amount of money to, you know, work with you on an intense basis for 6 months.
Stage it. Has a good point, like the sales background, I think is really helpful, because I'm sure your approach was, I have the answer to your problem. You have patients with diseases, and I have the drug. And I think, please correct me if I'm wrong, you guys want us to be good in the room.
That's what I'm saying. Hollywood's supportive. We want people to be good. We want to say yes.
So, like, we could kind of take a breath and relax. It's like they're rooting for us. They want to hear a good pitch. Because then they have something to bring their boss, and they look good, and they look good, and so on, up the food chain. So you guys are really on our side. I mean, I feel like that. We're going to be nervous, you know.
You wouldn't be there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You wouldn't be like, there. You wouldn't be at a general meeting if they didn't say, hey, I want to meet that person. Like, they asked you there.
Right.
Like, I never asked anybody to dinner and didn't want to spend other quality time with them.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, this is not this is a...
And so maybe not that drug, but maybe 6 months, we'll have another drug.
And by the way, another good thing to remember is, like, in terms of, along with the conversation of just being a good person that people like, I swear to God this is true. He was just talking about meet and greets. I have had so many situations where I've read a script, not really liked it, sort of read it quickly, had a fantastic meet and greet, and been like, oh man, maybe I was too hard on that script. You know, I'm going to read that script again. And I will read a script again once I like someone, and I might like it a little bit better. Because now I know the person, and then suddenly you want to like talk to them again. Now you want to read something they've written. I'm telling you, like, I reread scripts all the time when I've gotten to know someone. And I'm not saying if it's bad, I will suddenly say it's great. So it's got to be, you know, good enough. But I might go from here to here. Because I'm like, That is kind of funny. I can sort of see what they were going with there. Or like, you know, and it makes you want to help someone more and work with them more because they're actually a good person rather than like, it's just, I'm telling you, this industry is so like, you just cannot be, you cannot be a tough personality. You cannot be someone that doesn't want to take notes.
I think, you know, the impression that comes across, and I think Josh is right, wrongly, that somehow there is a defensive wall and we don't want anybody new breaching it, is, you know, evolves out of the simple statistics of the business. There are thousands of people in any given year that are trying to get in. There are a very finite number of jobs that any of those people can get. They're all much more competitively being sort of pursued by people who are already in the business. And just statistically speaking, anybody that does what we do, anybody that does what you guys do, is going to hear no 99 times for every time they hear yes.
And yeah, we hear no all the time too. Sucks.
I hear no all week, every week. Yeah. And what you need to do, I worked for a very wise producer many years ago, is who gave me some of the best advice I ever heard, and that is,
we need to write a book.
Best advice you ever heard is 50 pages long.
The number one best piece of advice I've ever heard.
Right. Right. A lot of subparagraphs in there. Is if your internal compass, so this is sort of material oriented, right? If I send something to somebody and they say, you're nuts, I'm passing on that, and I couldn't even get past pages. If my internal compass tells me that that's a great piece of material and I love it, then I've got to get to a place psychologically where that no is not just meaningless to me. It almost kind of spurs me on. It almost makes me kind of think, all right, I'm that much more committed to getting it done. You've got to have a tremendous amount of faith in your internal compass. That said, again, reiterating some very wise advice from this guy from a few minutes ago, not just in your meetings, not just in your interactions, your meet and greets, your production meetings, but across the board, in your interactions with people, be you, because authenticity cannot be faked. We've all got grates in, you know, BS detectors, and it sounds like in this case your BS detector didn't have to be too finely honed to feel. But we all have great built-in BS detectors. So be yourself, practice finding commonality, and Jamie, listen. It is such good advice. If somebody's given you feedback, they've taken the time to think about what you've done, and they may be crazy, but give them the respect of thinking about what they're offering you. And what you'll find is more often than not, if you're somebody who is willing to do that give and take, you know, you're going to end up having a good relationship with a producer, a director, a star, a co-writer, a colleague. And, you know, both extremes are toxic, and this is a really important thing to take away as well. The extreme where you are resistant to the point of you know, aggravation to any feedback is obviously useless. It's frustrating for the person on the other side of the desk. But the opposite is equally true. If you lay down because you're in a room with somebody that you judge to be a higher authority than you, when it's your story, if you lay down on everything, including the things that you really, really don't believe are correct, you're doing a disservice to the process that is, you know, just as much of an issue.
Yeah, they won't respect you either.
You've got to be that person who, you know, sort of listens, talks, you hear something you like, great, you embrace it. You hear something you don't like, you got to be willing to make the argument back why it doesn't work for you and sort of arrive at a place where, you know, everybody's comfortable with what you decide going forward, whether it's notes on a script or how you're going to, you know, strategize a sale and you're talking to your manager. Anything in this process is going to be based on your willingness to give and take.
Just because I know we're starting to run out of time, one thing that I want to bring up that I think is so important, again, in terms of going along, which seems to be our main theme of just being like a good person, it's amazing. So you finally make that connection, someone offers to read your script. There are two ways to go about follow-up. You should always follow up. There are two ways to do it. You can be the guy that emails and says, hey, I never heard back from you. It's been 3 weeks. What's up? Okay. Or you can be the person who says, hey, hope you're doing well. You're a Red Sox fan, right? Oh, I can't believe they won last night. Crazy game. hey, I know you're really busy. If you ever get a chance to read that script, I really would appreciate it. I'm really excited I was actually doing this. Here's another draft in case you lost it. No rush. Just, you know, I know you're busy. Whenever you get to it, it would be awesome. So that's another thing to remember is, you know, be appreciative when people are reading stuff, you know, and if people haven't read it, don't get on them.
Yeah, assume the best. No, yeah. Nobody is not reading because it's about you personally, or you know, they didn't like the color of your cover page. It's, you know, it's just simple math. It's just a pile, and they're busy, and you know, just assume the best. Don't assume that it's personal, and you will find that people seem much less aggravating that way.
Anybody hungry?
Yeah, let's do it.
Thank you guys for watching.
Interested in attending a 4-day writer's retreat or being considered for the CineStory Fellowship? Enter the CineStory Screenwriting Awards at cinestory.org/contest. The final deadline for the 2012 contest is February 15th. The grand prize includes $5,000 cash, free attendance at the retreat, and a 12-month fellowship program. CineStory would like to thank Don Bowden for use of the track Home from his album This One's Gonna Leave a Mark. Don is a composer for film, TV, and other media. To find out more about his work, visit donbowden.com. Finally, CineStory is a non-profit organization, so if you like what you hear, consider supporting these podcasts by making a donation at cinestory.org/about and click on the Support Us page. Until next time, happy writing.